You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks for tuning in. Happy New Year one more time, everybody. A couple fun guests are going to join us this week. We'll have Scott Sparlin. Scott is a hardcore Minnesota River advocate, and he wants to talk about an effort that he's got cooking to try to, one more time, let's clean up the Minnesota River, see what we can do to improve Minnesota's namesake water body. We will also check in with Ron Spolmer. Ron wrote a fun piece, a bucket list piece of different hunts and adventures that he thinks everybody should attempt if they're a hardcore hunter. So we'll check in with him, maybe preview the SHOT Show a little bit also. Les Meister will be with us later, but we're going to kick it off with Tim Spielman. Tim, I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. I hope the holidays and the new year treated you well.
I survived. You know, they're always fun, but it's always nice when you can get back to normal. I've had conversations with columnists and writers just in the past couple of weeks, and we're all trying to figure out what the heck day it is and when something is due and all that fun newspaper stuff. But we'll be back to normal. Everybody will get me their material on time, and we'll be happy again.
Certainly, we were all a little discombobulated with the days of the week that the holidays fell on this year. But like you say, we're back to normal. We've all reset. Tim, we should probably maybe have a brief discussion wrapping up some deer numbers. We know pretty much exactly how many deer we killed in 2025 here, finally, in Minnesota, and it officially was up from last year, huh?
Yeah, so the DNR mentioned earlier this week that the harvest was up, total harvest, all seasons included, was up 9% to about 186,000 deer this year, which is up over, 170,000, I think, about a year ago.
171, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, as we mentioned before, we figured we'd be moving in that direction given the past winters. It's nice to see it played out that way. Had a pretty good harvest. You know, it's still, as we've talked about, it's hard to imagine some of those really large harvests of the past, but this is a good move in the right direction. People seemed pretty satisfied with the hunt from what I could tell.
Yeah, I'd still like to see us get a little higher, get in that 200,000 range. It looks like the harvest was up in the Northeast. That was up 5%. I think, as maybe we alluded to a few weeks ago, 5% of not much is not much, but it at least it's going in the right direction. The Southwest saw a 6% increase. It looks like the Central and Southeast portions of the state we're up 8% and 11%. Some improvement there. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, we do have more chronic wasting disease positives too, don't we? I checked the DNR website, I believe on Tuesday, and the number I thought I saw was 121 statewide. I didn't see any more suspects, which I guess sinks, right? They pretty much know what they got. Everything's been tested. That's up from, I think it's up from 96 last year. So.
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't think we've had any, I guess I hadn't looked at the site to see what's left to be tested, but we haven't had any of those pop-ups like we had last year when there were two of them. So that's encouraging.
Okay, I'll give you that point. That's encouraging. I mean, at the same time, I mean, close to, I don't know what we're up to total, Tim, for the total number of positives. I think it's a little less than 500, maybe in the 490 range. I think the DNR has it on their website. But I mean, I think we had close to 100 last year. We've got over 100 this year. That means at least 40%, maybe 42, 43% of all the positives in the history of Minnesota have been in the past 2 years. It definitely seems to be accelerating.
Yeah, it has. I guess I don't know how many samples there were, but I did a story just a few weeks ago, and the sampling was basically on par with the last couple of years in terms of number, which is important when you look at the overall results, if the prevalence is increasing or not, which it appears to be to some extent. But again, when we're talking about the Southeast, which is where by far the vast majority are, and we've cut back on management, so to speak, efforts, it's probably not surprising.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate reality. And then we did get a couple of press releases in Wisconsin, speaking of CWD, two more counties over there now positive for that disease. Clark, I'm not even sure where Clark County is. Shame on me in Wisconsin.
It's right almost smack dab in the central, maybe slightly to the west.
Okay. I'm shocked that it wasn't already positive there, but... Yeah. The other one is La Crosse County, which is a big one. That's Miles' stomping grounds. It's a border county right across the river from La Crescent, Houston County. Maybe not quite as big a headline as it would have been 5-10 years ago now that we've got so many positive deer in southeastern Minnesota. I think we were all kind of watching as CWD expanded west towards Minnesota from in Wisconsin. We, you know, were concerned about when it would start infecting us here, and well, we're already there, so it's not quite as big a deal. But nonetheless, again, we got a whole region now, Tim, basically from Madison, Wisconsin, maybe even a little east of Madison, Wisconsin, all the way to Fillmore County, Minnesota, where we got CWD pretty well embedded in that beautiful bluff country, and the endemic rates just keep increasing.
Yeah.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Spielman are kicking off this week's broadcast. Tim, while we're still talking about deer here, you had a good column this week talking about party hunting, and I thought that was a good topic, and you took your time kind of fleshing it out. That's a thing here in Minnesota that we take for granted. I don't know if that's quite the right way to put it, but party hunting doesn't exist everywhere. It's kind of, we probably have one of the most liberal party hunting rules in the country, I think.
I don't know that for sure, but I'd say it's probably a real safe bet. Wisconsin does have it for gun hunting, but not for archery hunting. Mm. Minnesota has it for archery, muzzleloader, and firearms hunting as well. And there's certain rules to follow. But I keep bumping into people who say they're not real big fans of that. And they're probably a minority, as the DNR survey pointed out a year ago. But they raised some good points. And it happened. I bumped into a CO during the holidays. I wasn't in custody and I hadn't done anything wrong. We just crossed paths. So, but he brought it up. And so I thought, well, might as well take a look at this, poke the bear a little bit and see what people think. I don't think I was advocating for getting rid of it entirely, but you know, people should think about those things, how it affects the buck to doe ratio. I inquired with our guy, Eric Morgan, our colleague, and no matter the deer topic, he has an opinion that's usually a strong one.
and very thorough.
Oh, yeah. He puts a lot of thought into it. If you ask him a simple question, you'll get a 5-paragraph response, but that's exactly cool. I like that. And he pointed out that it discourages, in places where we're trying to thin the herd a little bit, it discourages doe harvest because people can just wait on bucks and whack bucks, and that might throw the ratio. He puts a lot of credence into the deer herd being healthy based on a buck to doe ratio. And when you have a situation like that where somebody's hunting or killing 4 or 5 bucks, which I think is more common than people realize, it's not doing that ratio any favors, and it's not reducing the herd, because reducing the herd is accelerated immensely by shooting does instead of bucks.
Right. Absolutely.
So
I agree 100%.
So it's just something to think about. You know, it doesn't really, it's a non-factor in a lot of places where deer numbers are, you know, they're kind of at goal. In other places, the Southeast, up in that transition area where Eric does a lot of hunting himself, it does have an effect. So I just think it's one of those things you to throw out there and see what people think, and not advocating, but giving folks some food for thought.
You know, I wonder if a happy medium would be to eliminate it for the archery season, especially given the fact that we've got a new influx of archers running around with crossbows.
Right.
If that might be something to consider. Well, one other quick point, Tim, is that I'd share with folks is every few years you hear a story about a group of Minnesotans that head out to Montana or Idaho or someplace to go elk hunting. and they're used to the party hunting rules here, and they just assume that's how it works out there. And, you know, inevitably someone gets pinched because a lot of those states do not allow party hunting, especially for elk. So anybody listening, I want to remind them, if you're heading west, do not assume that party hunting is legal. And in fact, I think Minnesotans kind of have a reputation with some of the game wardens out west. Watch those guys, because they all want to party hunt.
To piggyback on that, that's a point I did not bring up, but it is a point that the CO brought up, was that they have, it's common for COs in Minnesota to help out Western wardens in investigating that sort of thing. That's what I was told as well.
Because we got this interstate compact, and I suppose there's COs out west that contact law enforcement here and say, hey, can you help me track this guy down? And I don't doubt it one bit.
Yep.
Tim, we are about out of time. We got the DNR roundtable this Friday. We'll talk about it a lot next week, and we'll have it in next week's paper. I don't think party hunting is on the agenda, but maybe someone will suggest that.
Maybe I will.
I like it. Go for it. Go for it.
It might. I don't know. I think the fair game / technology, or fair chase, excuse me, that's probably not the proper place. We'll be talking about forward-facing sonar probably ad nauseum in that one.
One last point on party hunting. It's immensely popular, right? The DNR did a survey, and what was it, like only 14%, 14% of Minnesotan hunters said they don't like it. So you and I, if we think there's a little bit of room for maybe curbing it, appear to be in the minority.
Yeah, we would be.
All right. Tim, thanks a lot. We'll see you at the roundtable and talk next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. We're going to break. More of the broadcast when we return.
Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been dedicated to conserving waterfowl habitat, from breeding grounds and migration routes to southern wintering areas. Thanks to the efforts of our volunteers and supporters, we've conserved millions of acres. However, our work is far from over. You can be part of our next million-acre year. Visit ducks.org/volunteer to join the team making a real difference. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and 1 last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
Don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag, perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. 3 flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisland, happy to be with you for another segment. If you like the content of the broadcast, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you want to subscribe to our print or digital editions. I want to devote this segment talking about the Minnesota River and a gentleman who's been at the forefront of Minnesota River issues, conservation issues over the years is Scott Sparlin, a guy I've known since the mid to late 1990s. He's been working on the Minnesota River, trying to improve it for everybody. And there's some new efforts underway to keep that process rolling. Scott joins us now. Good to see you, Mr. Sparlin. Are you, you've been out fishing on the river this winter?
Yeah, and it's been pretty good. We've had some nice walleye bites early on. We're looking forward to a really good year.
Well, let's talk about the hunting and fishing opportunities on the Minnesota River. I think it's an area that folks sometimes forget about. It's a great fishing river, right? With a multitude of species, walleyes, catfish. There's even a few paddlefish kicking around in there. You're probably supposed to leave them alone. But my point is it's a real diverse fishery.
It is a very diverse fishery, and, you know, it's one that does often get overlooked. I mean, people spend a lot of money and travel a long distance to go to Lake of the Woods when they can run right down here in the city limits of New Ulm, Minnesota, and get themselves all the 6 to 8 pound walleyes trophies, you know, right in the city limits. But the fun of the river, of course, is catching what you don't know is going to be on the end of your, on the end of your line. Yeah. From mud puppies to a gar, to a shovel-nosed sturgeon, we have really got a diverse fishery.
Well, you are the executive director of the Coalition for a Clean Minnesota River. Where are you from originally, Scott? Why is cleaning up the Minnesota River and improving the state's namesake waterway so important to you?
Well, you know, originally I grew up on the Mississippi River at Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And I swam in the Mississippi, and I've had some profound experiences on that river, had them, and then I started my career, you know, in school, and went to University of Minnesota, went to Mankato State, it's called Minnesota State now. And, you know, since that time, I moved to New Ulm, and, you know, I just got to that feeling that I was back at the river where I really had some profound experiences on the Mississippi, and they just kind of morphed right into the Minnesota. And I was sitting on the riverbank many years ago with my son at the time, and he asked me why the water looked like chocolate milk. And I said, you know, I'm going to find out. And that was in 1996, or should say 1986. Since then, just took it on as, you know, something that grew.
So the Minnesota, great recreational asset, important waterway for commerce and other activities, yet it lies in some of the most intensely farmed agricultural lands in the country. And that's one reason the water probably looked a little like chocolate milk when you were talking to your son. Now, there were probably flood stage issues, you know, pre-settlement where occasionally the river would look like chocolate milk, yep. But it's almost all the time now, right?
You know, that's part of it. And of course, we have algal blooms. We have sediment itself. The river does have fine clay particles in it. The Blue Earth River puts in a lot of natural clay. The name is slightly troubled water, cloudy water, water that sky tinted water. So it's, you know, there's the Dakota have named it in different degrees, and there's dialects of that that gets lost in the shuffle. But it always had a certain amount of sediment in it. But there's degrees of sediment and degrees of, you know, suspended solids. Sure. Yeah. Sure. And so, you know, that's what we're experiencing. We've changed our landscape, and that is what it is. And we have the technology now to move forward with things. But what we don't have is the political will and the capital and the, you know, the amount of money and time and effort it's going to take to improve it. And why should we? Well, that's what we're here to do, is to make that case.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisland. We are chatting with Scott Sparlin. He's the executive director of the Coalition for a Clean Minnesota River, talking about why the Minnesota River is important recreationally, some of the efforts that have already occurred to try to clean up the river. Let's talk about this new thrust, this new opportunity. You and some friends of mine, longtime conservation friends of mine, have got something going called the Minnesota River Collaborative.
Right.
And there's already the Minnesota River Congress that meets annually to talk about these issues. Sounds like this collaborative is meeting weekly. So, Scott, you and this collaborative want to create something called the Minnesota River Coordinating Commission. Can you tell listeners what that's all about and what you hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah. After 20 years, the former Minnesota River Board, the 36 county commissioners, decided to throw their hands up and say, you know, this is the state's problem. And the state really hasn't responded by putting together an entity that is needed. I mean, we have a Mississippi River Headwaters Board. We have a Red River Board.
When did that happen, Scott? When did
the... That was 2012.
Okay. All right.
2012. And so we've waited a long time. And the idea of this commission was one of the original 10 recommendations back in 1994. Okay. That were given to the PCA that we should get a commission to do this. And what we need now is a coordinating commission. And, you know, it's come down to the point that where we're going to have to create an entity that will do the things that some of our state agencies have not been able to or willing to follow through with. This coordinating commission is everybody at the table and everybody talking, and let's get through this. We have solutions.
Are you optimistic that you can at least get a bill introduced here during the 2026 session in Minnesota?
I'm sure hoping that that is what will happen. If we can get a bill introduced and get a hearing, I'd be jumping for joy. I've talked to people on both in the Senate and the House, and there's some opportunities there, and we've got support. And I think, you know, getting our friends throughout the basin and in the whole state actually involved in this is a good idea.
I think a lot of people might be surprised how many folks live within the Minnesota River watershed. I live in Eden Prairie. The Minnesota River is less than a mile away from me. I sometimes forget that it's there.
Exactly.
I think that stands true for a lot of folks. Do you know that number, how many people live within the Minnesota River watershed?
Yeah, I do. The last I heard it was about 890,000.
Okay, so between 15 and 20% of the state.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people listening out there where their legislator has got some skin in the game. They've got skin in the game on this, and perhaps they could be a potential author.
Well, also, Rob, let's not forget those people that are downstream from Pike sure. Island in the Mississippi, you know, going all the way to the state line.
I'm an old Winona guy myself, yeah.
There you go.
Do you expect some opposition? Where do you expect the opposition from on this, Scott? And will there be enough opposition to prevent this from happening? I got to think you're going to get a bill introduced, at least, I would hope.
Well, I would hope. But, you know, here's the deal. If the first thing that comes out of a lot of people's mouths when you propose something like this is another layer of government. I've heard that a million times. But, you know, here's the other deal. The reason you need another layer of government is the current layer of government is not handling the situation. Yeah. So sometimes you have to step in and coordinate and get things done.
In 30 seconds or less, Scott, can you describe to someone in the Minnesota River watershed, downstream, or maybe anywhere in the state of Minnesota, why this commission is important, why we need to get this thing implemented for the state?
For starters, let's look at the idea of water quality and quantity. You know, this is costing the state of Minnesota a lot of money, and there is a monetary part of this that people do not realize. One of them is the costs associated with our infrastructure. You know, Henderson is a great example right now. The state of Minnesota is spending millions and millions of dollars just to raise a road because of the Minnesota River. And it's going to be more and more of this. And, you know, how about the Rapidan Dam giving way and, you know, and causing downstream stuff? This is not a canary in the coal mine. This is, I think it's like a wild turkey in the coal mine.
Okay. Well, I like that. It's kind of good. Well, Scott, you know you got a supporter in me. I hope you get this commission put together, and you can. Thanks for all you have done to drive Minnesota River cleanup forward over the past four decades.
Yeah.
You're an incredible advocate and asset to this state. If folks want more information, if they want to help out, if they say, "Yeah, I'm going to contact my legislator and advocate for this Minnesota River Coordinating Commission," where can they go?
They can go to mnrivercongress.org.
mnrivercongress.org. That's the Minnesota River Congress that we mentioned earlier.
Yep.
mnrivercongress.org. Yep. Lots of information there.
Rob, just one thing I wanted to add to is the Minnesota River Collaborative is looking for more people. If you are like-minded and think that we need to tackle this problem, I would go to the Minnesota River Collaborative, you know, or just contact us through that.
Through the Congress?
Through the Congress, yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, Scott, thanks so much for spending time with me. Thanks for all you do on behalf of the Minnesota River and all conservation in the state. And I hope the new year treats you very well.
Thank you, and same to you, and thanks for having me.
All right, that was Scott Sparland, Executive Director of the Coalition for a Clean Minnesota River. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the Squirrel Woods to Deer Camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag. Perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Have more success on the ice with the LiveScope Plus Ice Fishing Bundle LI from Garmin. Drill fewer holes, catch more fish. This portable live sonar bundle comes with the LiveScope Plus system, EchoMap UHD 93SV display, and a lithium battery, all packaged in a case making hole hopping a breeze. LiveScope Plus helps you find more fish with improved resolution, reduced noise, clearer images, and better target separation. Fill your freezer with fillets with help from Garmin. Visit Garmin.com or shop your local Garmin dealer today.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Teresine with you for another segment. I hope you like the content of our broadcast. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191 where you can subscribe to print or digital versions. I want to have a guest join us now who I don't know if he's ever been with me before. If he has, it's been many, many years, but he's one of the best outdoor communicators in the country, one of the best shooting writers in the world. His name is Ron Spomer. He's been an outdoors writer. He's been in the business. What'd you say when we were off air, Ron, since 1976? Hell of a run.
Yeah, 1976, if you can believe it. I'm surprised I can still talk and walk.
Well, did you hail from South Dakota originally?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yep. Grew up in South Dakota.
You wrote for a number of magazines over the years. You were on, I know folks have seen you on TV. Now it sounds like you and your wife, Betsy, focusing kind of on the podcasting thing and YouTube videos. That's the best place to see what you've got going. Is that right?
Yeah, sure is. Ron Spomer Outdoors on YouTube, and then Ron Spomer Outdoors Podcast on the usual podcast places and YouTube. We do a visual on that one as well.
And you still write for Outdoor News, which I appreciate immensely. You add a lot of color and character to our publication. I love your writing. You're very, very knowledgeable on the shooting sports, and I appreciate having your byline in Outdoor News after all these years, Ron. We got the SHOT Show coming up here in just a couple of weeks. That's in Vegas again this year, one of the biggest outdoor-related shows in the world. You'll be out there again for the 2026 show, and any trends in the firearm industry that you'll be looking for while you're out there?
Well, I certainly will be looking at trends. It's kind of all about the high aerodynamic bullets anymore. You know, it used to be in the 20th century, we were all trying to push them faster and faster. And now you get these new cartridges that come out and you go, well, wait a minute, this is considerably slower than what we've been using. What's going on? And what they've decided is they're going to start making their bullets more efficient. So instead of adding more horsepower to the initial load, you just keep that horsepower, the kinetic energy in your bullet by having essentially a race car shape instead of a Mack truck shape. So that's the trend with all these Creedmoor cartridges and PRCs and everything that you hear about. They just are set up to push highly efficient, aerodynamically efficient bullets. So they retain energy farther down range. That means they don't drop as much as the older bullet designs, and they don't deflect as much in the wind. So they're more efficient, and it makes it a little easier to stay on target and be accurate at distance.
It seems like there has been some emphasis on shorter barrel rifles, and we saw, you know, Federal introduced their 7mm backcountry load last year, trying to maybe appeal to that marketplace a little bit, and kind of hand in hand with that has been this suppressor marketplace, folks carrying shorter rifles, which I'm generalizing can be a little louder. So that's where the suppressor thing enters. That market certainly exploded, the suppressor thing, the past few years, huh?
Yeah, that sure did. And everybody's going to 20-inch barrels, 18-inch, right, even 16-inch barrels. So manufacturers like the one you mentioned, the 7mm backcountry from Federal, they are trying to get traditional velocities matching 20th century cartridges like the 280 Remington. They're going to get the same velocities as that, but they're going to use the shorter barrel so that you can then put a suppressor on it and not blow your ears out, have a little more convenient package. Nothing wrong with the old 22-inch and 24-inch barrels and then put a suppressor on it, keeping your velocity up with the traditional cartridges like 270, 280, 30-06. So then you've added 6 to 7 inches to the entire length of your rifle.
Right.
It gets a little bit cumbersome. You're getting back to the muzzleloader days.
The Davy Crockett squirrel guns. Hey, this is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreesen. We're talking with Ron Spomer, shooting writer. Touch base about the SHOT Show quick. You can read what Ron's got going at ronspomeroutdoors.com or follow him on YouTube. I want to talk about a story, kind of a fun story you wrote for Outdoor News recently, Ron. It was called we called it 16 Bucket List Adventures for 2026 and Beyond from Alaska to Africa. I think, and I'm guilty of this too, as I get older, some of the far out dreams that I had about, you know, traveling abroad, the concept like going on safari. And I think you and I have talked a little bit, you know, I'm a big Hemingway guy, so I'm really into thinking about going abroad and experiencing some of those adventures. We fall into this trap of it's just unattainable. There's just no way anyone could possibly afford it. And you make a good case in this story of, yeah, you could spend a lot of money on some trips, but you can have a massive, incredible travel experience trip for a surprisingly affordable rate.
Yeah, it really is surprising. You know, this started for me in Africa. You know, I always figured as a country boy in South Dakota, wouldn't it be great to go play Tarzan and go to Africa? But who could afford that? You know, you've got to be Hemingway or Rourke or President Roosevelt or somebody with money. And a farm boy from South Dakota doesn't have that. But I found out that it is these days a lot more affordable to hunt Southern African countries than it is North America. If you want to go on a moose hunt in Alaska, for instance, for the money you would pay for a really good quality moose hunt up there, you could probably take 2 or 4 trips to Southern Africa to hunt a variety of game. So, I mean, it's just shocks me to realize that. Yeah, you're going to spend $2,500 to maybe $3,000 in air traffic to get over there. But once you're there, your outfitter picks you up and takes care of you. You get all your room and board and fed, and the guides take you out and you hunt, you pick your game. You don't have to buy a bunch of licenses ahead of time. You wait until you're there and you say, well, that's a big kudu. I think I want to shoot it. Well, that one's going for $2,000. Then you shoot it and pay it. So you can pick up a kudu and an eland and an impala and a bunch of different antelopes for less money than one moose hunt and sometimes even one elk hunt in the Rocky Mountains.
You can spend a whole lot more if you want to go after one of the, quote, big five animals over there, right?
Oh, sure,
lion, Cape buffalo, elephant. I don't even know if you can hunt elephants anymore. But your point is you can shoot some really uniquely African animals that make an incredible mount and have the whole experience of an African safari for a much more affordable rate than people probably realize.
Absolutely. That's just it. And of all the people I take over there, we usually go over every year or every second year and take a few friends along, different people. And we're going twice this year.
Great.
In the summer. And people just are shocked at how many animals are over there. It's not like you come out west hunting. I talked to a guy the other day. He said, well, my buddies and I all went on a guided hunt in Montana for elk. And in 1 week, no one got an elk and we only saw one.
Right.
And they paid like $4,000 each for the hunt. Well, okay, there you go. But you go to Africa and in one day you decide which of these five big trophy bulls of various species that I've seen do I want to shoot? It's just amazing.
And for folks listening, they might worry about the great white hunters going overseas and destroying all the animals over there. First of all, there's been hunting in Africa for a long, long time. But explain how intensely managed these herds are over there.
Sure. They have more native big game animals living on private ranches and hunting farms in Africa than they do in all their national parks because there's a demand for it. And what these ranchers and or farmers have done is figured out that I can grow and raise more native game, kudu and eland and gemsbuck and all the rest of them with less trouble and expense than domestic cattle because they're adapted to this environment and yeah. They can take care of themselves. So the result of that is they've restored the native wildlife that they had formerly wiped out so they can raise sheep and cattle.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing and interesting. It's different than our system, but boy, does it ever work. You just see so many animals.
Let's talk North America for just a few minutes. You know, for the average person who wants to try a big game, and a quote-unquote exotic big game hunt here in North America, what do you think's an unheralded opportunity or an opportunity where they're going to score and maybe not have to break the bank? Is it caribou? Is it pronghorn? It's probably not a sheep. I'll let you talk, Ron. What do you think about the question?
No, it's definitely not a sheep. No, that's just a domestic one. Well, really, oddad isn't too bad of an option down in Texas, New Mexico, and into Mexico. This oddad from North Africa is getting to be a bit of a problem animal, overpopulating and whatnot. So there are a lot of opportunities there, but feral pigs, I think most guys have figured out you go south for feral pigs and you can do a lot of shooting for next to nothing, although there are trespass fees and the usual, but those are good options. As far as public land hunting and reasonable costs and such, I think pronghorn is a good first. It's getting tougher and tougher to get a tag for it because there's such a demand, but you've got a lot of public land and it's wide open so you can see them. It's not like you're hunting a new species that's as secretive as a whitetail. You go out with your binocular, you look around, you say, well, there's pronghorn running around out here. Let's just get close enough to shoot one. So it's a great hunt, a good opportunity to get your feet on the ground and try, as you said, sort of an exotic animal, even though it's native. But that's a good first hunt that's doable for the average person without having to hire a guide and outfit.
It used to be not that long ago, even the late 1990s, when I hunted caribou, that was a great opportunity. There were a lot of herds. If you knew what you were doing, you could come back with a couple of caribou. I did that, like I say, and I think in the year 2000. Those herds, they're not as big as they were. I was just reading about some of the Alaska herds. Is that a little bit of a concern for you?
Well, it's a concern in that you've lost your opportunities for the kind of hunting we had in the 90s when the herds just exploded.
Right.
But I think what has happened, I think there's a cycle to caribou similar to the snowshoe hare or the rough grouse cycles. Every 10 years, they're up, then they're down, they crash. I think there's something going on with caribou that's similar, but it's on a much larger scale, like maybe 50 to 100 years. Because I can remember as a lad in the 50s and 60s, caribou were fairly scarce. And then in the 80s, they started to, you heard rumors that they were really big herds again. And then in the 90s, oh my gosh, they were talking about herds of millions. And you could get five tags and holy mackerel. And then they crashed again. So I think that's what's going on. I think they kind of overeat up there on that fragile tundra. And it takes a long time for that vegetation to come back. Perhaps that's what's going on. But at any rate, they no longer have the millions animal herds up there.
Before we let you go, one other destination, Australia and New Zealand. Are those kind of secret dark horse locations to get into some unique hunting that maybe won't break the bank?
a little bit. They're not really secret, but they're sort of in that off corner. If you can have a corner on a circle, you've got the corner of the world down there. That's pretty far off, but beautiful country. I've been to New Zealand a couple of times, Australia once, and they have introduced game. They didn't have all, they just had marsupial mammals there.
Right.
Of course, the settlers brought in the familiar things from back in the old country. So they've got a lot of red stag and fallow deer and some Himalayan tar and different things like that. So I think a big part of the fun is that it's such an unusual location.
Sure.
The vegetation is different and you're out in the middle of the ocean somewhere and you start to think about, well, wait a minute, who discovered this country? And you learn about the history and all that fun stuff.
I could keep going with you around forever. I mean, you've traveled the world, you've hunted around the world. Safe travels here. You're going to Africa twice. Any other big destinations in 2026?
Well, we might be going to Tasmania, but I think we're going to put that off till 27.
Okay.
But we're going to South Carolina. I met a friend through my stuff on YouTube who has a big swamp that has the world's largest concentration of wood storks and various egrets and such in the middle of March that just fills up. He showed me a video and the place explodes. It's like the Platte River in Nebraska when the Sandy Cranes are in. Thousands and thousands of these. We're going to zip down there in the middle of March and see that.
That's a bird watching trip.
Yeah, that's a bird watching thing.
Good for you. Well, thanks so much, Ron. RonSpomerOutdoors.com and follow Ron on YouTube. Have a great 2026, my friend.
You too, Rob. We'll see ya.
Ron Spomer. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and 1 last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
You took the first step and quit smoking. But even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hot spots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, final segment of this week's broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I am Rob Dreesline. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up. Read Tim or I in the print version of Outdoor News or online at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe by giving us a call at 800-535-5191. Tim, welcome to the show. Good to see you. You're in Florida. I was in North Carolina a little bit. We both did a little surf fishing, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, I it's one thing I actually kind of enjoy doing because I find it very relaxing. You know, after the holidays, and for me, I travel a lot during the holidays, a lot of stress. I had two flights get canceled because of fog. And I actually ended up having to drive from Cedar Rapids, Iowa to Kansas City, Missouri to catch a flight to get back to Florida.
Okay.
Because I couldn't get out. I my flight was supposed to go out on Saturday. They weren't going to let us out until Tuesday or Wednesday.
Cedar Rapids to KC, that's a good drive.
That was 5 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, this is the stuff you do when you're in a situation like we are traveling north in the wintertime. But it happens. You know, I've traveled a lot and I've been in situations like that. But holidays stressful. And sometimes you get back to Florida here in the winter months and you say, well, I got all this open water. These beaches look very inviting. I'm going to pitch up a chair and I'm going to grab a couple rods and a couple of sand spikes and I'm going to get out there and do some surf casting. It's very relaxing.
As I think I mentioned, we get out to North Carolina just about every year to see my brother. He's a Marine out there. And this added a new kind of dimension to it, getting out and doing a little fishing. We didn't have much luck, as you and I were talking off air, especially in North Carolina. That's kind of a hard time of year. The best times are during the migratory periods, you know, when the fish are going up the coast in the spring or coming back down the coast in the fall. And that wraps up probably by the end of November. So you get into late December, it's pretty quiet. I don't think it was us. Nobody was having much luck fishing.
I didn't have much luck, but I did have some luck.
Now, you were in Florida, though. I mean, that's where the fish migrate too, right?
You bet. But it's a little slow right now, too. And I think a lot of it has to do with water temperatures, fish migration and such. But for me, you know, you get kind of a nice little pattern going where you know what spots to go to. You have the right sinkers. I think the weights are very important. If you don't stick that weight into the sand, it's going to move all that bait right back to the shore. No bites when you get it that close, mostly just snags. I also shoot a lot of pellets. These are chum pellets out into the water. I use a slingshot.
Interesting.
A slingshot. And it gets a little frenzy going, and so you definitely get some bites. For me, it's about getting the bigger fish, and that's one of the problems I have sometimes when I'm surf casting is I get a lot of bites, but I don't find the big fish until I get enough chum out there and get a few shrimp being chewed off the bait or off the hook to get some fish that are in a feeding frenzy.
And you use circle hooks. I'm going to share all this with my son. He was really into it, so this is some absolute good advice for him. Back to Minnesota. We had quite a bit of breaking news while we were gone over the holidays. The big one was just earlier this week, Governor Tim Walz deciding he's not going to run again. I know you've hunted with Governor Walz at a number of events over the years. I've gotten to know his DNR people quite well. I disagree with them on a lot, but I think they've run a pretty clean, tight ship over there at DNR under this administration. We're probably going to have a different DNR commissioner, different DNR brass this time next year.
I always thought that Walz surrounded himself with some pretty good people. And I also thought that he was sometimes getting beat up over things that he didn't deserve. You know, people one time, they showed a picture of him holding up a rifle or something and said, see, he doesn't even know what the end of the gun is. No, this guy could shoot.
Yeah.
I was out pheasant hunting with this guy a few times. And I'm telling you right now, when a bird got up, it was dead. If it got up in front of Walz, he was quick, very fast. And he could get off a shot, and he almost always dropped the birds. Sometimes to my chagrin, where he popped a couple that were going to head right towards Dayton one time that I wish Dayton would have got some shots. Got a little ticked off at Walz for that one, but I was pretty impressed with his gun handling. I think he's getting a lot of abuse in social media right now, and it's probably just way more than any normal human being could handle. I'm kind of sad to see him going away.
There hasn't been strong leadership from this governor on the outdoors. I mean, it seems like almost every governor has had something. You know, Dayton, for example, had his pheasant summit. Arnie Carlson had the Minnesota River cleanup, his efforts. There's others that we could bring up, too. I guess there were some funding initiatives that Walz pushed here a couple of years ago, you know, to to help the outdoors. But there was never a vision. You know, even like Plenty had his great big new state park up in, on Lake Vermilion. You know, there's nothing like that. No, no. And I mean, he's got another year. Maybe he'll try to pull something like that off.
I don't think he will. I think a lot of times these governors do this because they think that there's an outdoor vote that they can pull a few voters off into the ballot box just by initiating something like that. But, you know, outdoor people, they're not very vocal. I don't know if they really do vote for their programs. So I'm not exactly sure that Walz will see any value here.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisland and Tim Lesmeister are winding down this week's broadcast. Had a couple big cougar stories in other states. I think they're both pertinent and relevant to what we've got going here in Minnesota. One, we had a gal last week was killed by cougar or cougars. What was she? East of Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. That sound like they tracked these cats down. One of them had human DNA on its paws, so I think they're pretty well convinced that was the culprit.
Well, she was out in Crozier Mountain Trail, and that's in Rocky Mountain National Park. And there are cougars out there. And I've talked to so many people that are runners and they're hikers, and these are people that are in Alaska and northern Minnesota, places where there's bears, northern Wisconsin, places where there's moose, places where there's cougars, places where there are these animals that could potentially attack you. And sometimes they do. And most of these people are never in a position where they have anything to protect themselves. One of the guys that was there at that same spot in November had to beat off a cougar with a stick. Now, come on. You guys should be carrying something. I want you to be carrying two cans of bear spray, one on each hip. I want you to be carrying a Berna. That's a non-lethal pistol. You can shoot pepper spray with that. You can shoot mace balls. You can shoot hard plastic balls. You can turn a dog. You can turn a wolf. You can turn a moose. You can turn anything with this stuff, and yet you don't want to carry it. Why? Oh, you know, this is uncomfortable. Trust me, when I'm in Alaska and I'm pulling my kayak down a trail to get to a small lake up in the hills, up in the mountains, I've got a bear spray on one side. I've got a bear spray on the other. I've got a 50 caliber Desert Eagle strapped to my chest, and I've got a Berna on my belt. That's a pistol. That's a non-lethal pistol. I'm prepared. I'm ready. If something comes out of the woods, and it has before, I'm ready. You should be too.
One other quick cougar note, Tim. Northern Michigan, last winter, I think it was in March, we reported there were photos of a couple of wild cougar cubs in the Upper Peninsula, I think Ontonagon County, that's kind of along the, probably would be what due east of the Porcupine Mountains. That's some wild country up there. We didn't see or hear much more of them. We got a new trail cam picture, and I think we had in last week's Outdoor News, where we see Mama Cat and two, they don't look like cubs anymore. They look like they're growing fast. Again, the first sign of breeding activity we've seen from mountain lions east of the Mississippi River in 100 years.
I think it's fantastic. I always like to see predator populations expand. Now, I think the wolf population in Minnesota's got to the point where it needs some little bit of hunter activity to kind of keep it in check. But I do believe that having cougars, having mountain lions in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, even northern Minnesota is going to be great. As the predator populations expand, you're going to see all of the everything changing, the moose population, deer populations, wolf populations. I think cougar populations could expand dramatically very quickly. People always say, oh, no, we don't want that to happen. But I appreciate it. I think it's great when you see these animals that were probably once very, very dominant in these regions come back.
It'll be interesting to see if this population gets a foothold or if it fizzles out. But nonetheless, it shows that it's possible. The prey base for sure is there. Well, Tim, hey, some fun topics. Good seeing you again, and we'll talk to you in 7 days.
Catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, appreciate him. All of our other guests. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Dreisland, signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story and the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.